Item six, Richard Hawley.
Good morning, Commissioner Travelstead and members. Mr. Richard Hawley is requesting after-the-fact authorization to retain approximately 227 linear feet of timber retaining wall, 108 linear feet of vinyl bulkhead next to an existing boat ramp that was recently resurfaced adjacent to his property at 104 Cove Circle, situated at the confluence of a man-made canal and the eastern branch of the Elizabeth River in Chesapeake. The project will require a wetlands permit. As I mentioned, the project site is situated along the eastern branch of the Elizabeth River. This is a close-up. The man-made canal has been visible in historical aerial images since approximately 1971. Just for reference, this is Interstate 264 and Broad Creek across here. This is Mr. Hawley's property. The green outlines the approximate property limit. Basically, in 2011, Mr. Hawley installed a low timber retaining wall to define a boundary between the upland and the tidal marsh. This is a plan view drawing that was received. You can see this timber retaining wall is approximately 227 feet long. He also installed 108 linear feet of vinyl bulkhead around a boat ramp that was also resurfaced. There's a little bit of history with this site that I'd like to review because I think it's pertinent to this application. In 2005, Mr. Hawley was issued a notice of violation for the placement of unauthorized fill in the Chesapeake Bay Preservation Area, as well as in vegetated tidal wetlands adjacent to his property. City staff required the removal of the fill that was placed in the tidal wetlands within 30 days, and they also required the installation of a silt fence at the boundary between the Chesapeake Bay Preservation Area and the wetlands. Mr. Hawley did comply with this, and the violation was resolved. And Mr. Hawley did not think that he needed a wetlands permit for the currently unauthorized timber wall because he constructed it landward of the silt fence that he had installed at the direction of city staff. So he thought he had constructed it in an area that was outside of jurisdictional wetlands. In 2007, subsequent to this, there was a memorandum for the record that indicates that city staff did meet with Mr. Hawley as well as Mr. Bob Simon with Waterfront Consulting Incorporated, who is here to represent Mr. Hawley today, and they discussed possible shoreline stabilization alternatives. And according to the memo, staff had suggested a living shoreline option to minimize the impact, and it was noted that a future JPA was pending. In May 2010, and prior to constructing the project, Mr. Hawley hosted a pre-application meeting on site, which was attended by city staff as well as VMRC. At this time, again, Mr. Hawley was made aware of the fact that he did need to submit a joint permit application prior to conducting any shoreline improvements. However, he constructed his project without authorization in 2011. Subsequent to this, he submitted an after-the-fact application in August of 2012. This is just a cross-section view of the as-built vinyl bulkhead on the left, and on the right is a cross-section view of the timber retaining wall as-built. The majority of the work, except for an approximate 50-foot section of the retaining wall, was constructed on land, on property not currently owned by Mr. Hawley. It appears that this property belongs to a defunct corporation. In the original application that Mr. Hawley submitted, impacts to both the vegetated and the non-vegetated wetlands were listed as unknown. Initially, Mr. Hawley proposed to convert 680 square feet of non-vegetated wetlands to vegetated wetlands to mitigate for the unauthorized impact to the vegetated wetlands. However, as we discussed with him early on, the conversion of non-vegetated wetlands to vegetated wetlands is not considered compensation. Compensation results in the creation of wetland habitat, and this the planting of non-vegetated wetlands converts one type of wetland to another. I'm going to go through a couple of the site, some historical site photos as well as current photos, and then I'll discuss the results of the VIMS assessment. These are photos that Mr. Hawley provided. The date on the back of them was from 2002. So this is looking at the boat ramp and the pre-existing bulkhead surrounding that. And you can see this is looking to the southeastern corner of the property. You can see there is a fringing marsh that was established behind the remnants of the old timber bulkhead that was installed. It's my understanding, and this was installed back in the 60s. Again, this is looking towards the boat ramp. You can see this is the area that was filled when he constructed the vinyl bulkhead. And these are still photos from 2002. This is looking towards the northern portion of his property. Again, you can see here the remnants of an old bulkhead and the fringing marsh. And in this photo, it appears that there has been a pre-existing low-profile structure. I believe these are cinder blocks that essentially demarcated the wetlands from the upland. And I believe that Mr. Hawley installed the timber bulkhead roughly along that same location. And again, he installed it along just landward of the silt fence where the city had told him to put in that boundary marker. These are photos that were taken in 2010 when VMRC had attended that pre-application site visit. And you can see this is the silt fence that Mr. Hawley had installed. Not quite as clear in this picture. This is another photo that was taken on a couple days later at a little bit higher of a tide. And what I wanted to point out with this is that the spartina is growing landward of the silt fence. And this is important because it's very possible, based on the elevation, that these would have been jurisdictional wetlands. And that's why it would have been pertinent for him to submit the application for review in order to determine exactly what the impacts were to vegetated wetlands as a result of this. On the left-hand side, you can see these are some photos taken in May 2010. This is looking, again, north towards the northern corner of the property. This is the point that sits right on the eastern branch of the Elizabeth River. Previously, Mr. Hawley had been mowing this area, and he stopped mowing it, and you can see a couple years later the result of that. He does have vegetated marsh that has established itself nicely in this portion of the property. And you can see this site photo was taken in a very similar location to the one taken on the left, and the timber retaining wall, which is barely visible here, but it's located right in this area. Again, on the left-hand side, more photos from the 2010 site visit, and the photos on the right are from my site visit last fall, and you can see the timber retaining wall here and along this location. This is just a close-up showing the silt fence and the retaining wall that was constructed just landward of that. This is just a picture of the improvements related to the boat ramp as well as the vinyl bulkhead that was constructed. I was out there just a couple weeks ago, and you can see these are my site photos from that visit. Mr. Hawley, at that meeting a couple weeks ago, provided some additional Google images that I went ahead and added to my presentation today. This is from 2005, and you can see this was right after, this photo was taken right after that silt fence had been installed, so roughly in this location. This one is from 2008. It's not quite as clear, but it's still there. And then I just want to draw your attention, because you'll notice the changes in this location in the next image. This is where he constructed the vinyl bulkhead and filled the wetlands. In order to determine the impact after the fact to the vegetated and to the vegetated wetlands, we requested assistance from VIMS. In their report dated January 24, 2013, they indicated that impacts to approximately 1,150 square feet of vegetated wetlands occurred in two distinct areas. The vinyl bulkhead and backfill next to the pier, which would be in this general location, resulted in the filling of approximately 250 square feet of vegetated tidal wetlands, and the low-profile timber retaining wall, which was constructed along here, resulted in an impact to an additional 900 square feet of vegetated wetlands. And during our site visit on December 4th, 2012, new wetland vegetation was observed both by VIMS and VMRC staff landward of the timber retaining wall, where the elevation remains suitable for growth. VIMS states that if they had reviewed this project prior to construction, they would have suggested other alternatives for shoreline protection with less wetland impact, such as vegetative stabilization. A combined riparian wetland buffer would have improved cover over bare soil areas, provided erosion and flood protection, and improved water quality. When retaining walls and other landscape management structures are considered necessary, the current guidelines suggest that they should be placed landward of any productive tidal marsh. And according to VIMS, for the low timber retaining wall, this alignment would have been about 2 to 6 feet landward of the current location. And for the vinyl bulkhead section, this would have been at least 10 feet landward of the current location. A couple of other environmental concerns that were identified by VIMS in their report, one of which being how navigation in that canal is limited by shallow water depths, and the preferred approach would have been to use open pile structures instead of filling the wetlands for that navigational access. The other environmental issue that was raised by VIMS is the use of the fill material from a construction site with an unknown composition. Mr. Hawley did indicate that the majority of that fill had been placed back in 2005, and that was opportunistically obtained by him. But as the VIMS report stated, backfill materials for bulkheads should be free of debris and allow for the movement of water and be good quality sandy soil. VIMS states that if the structures and fill are permitted to remain in place, then adequate wetland compensation should be provided for all unavoidable tidal wetland loss. If a joint permit application had been submitted prior to the commencement of the work, staff would have supported a living shoreline as the preferred alternative for shoreline stabilization, given the existing site conditions, which are characterized by a low energy shoreline, a gradual slope, and an existing tidal marsh. This is consistent with the policy expressed in 28.2-104.1C1 of the Code of Virginia, which states, it is the policy of the Commonwealth to support living shorelines as the preferred alternative for stabilizing tidal shorelines. Staff would not have supported the installation of a low-profile timber retaining wall to delineate the upland from the existing wetlands, nor would staff have supported the filling of vegetated wetlands adjacent to the vinyl bulkhead. Accordingly, after evaluating the merits of the project and after considering all of the factors contained in 28.2-1302-10B of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends denial of Mr. Hawley's after-the-fact request to retain 227 linear feet of timber retaining wall and 108 linear feet of vinyl bulkhead. Staff recommends restoration of the site by requiring the removal of these structures and associated backfill, which have impacted approximately 1,150 square feet of vegetated wetlands. Should the commission decide to approve the vinyl bulkhead or some portion of the project, staff would recommend the submission of a restoration plan that includes on-site compensation for the filling of the vegetated wetlands. Provided that the timber retaining wall is removed, this could be achieved by grading a portion of the adjacent upland to an appropriate elevation and planting high marsh wetlands vegetation. The compensation should be at a minimum ratio of 1-to-1. If Mr. Hawley prefers to relocate the retaining wall landward of jurisdictional wetlands, staff would recommend an offset distance of at least 6 feet from the existing alignment. Staff recommends the consideration of a civil charge of $6,000 based on a moderate degree of impact due to the unauthorized filling of vegetated wetlands and a moderate degree of non-compliance. Staff recommends waiving the civil charge if Mr. Hawley agrees to the complete restoration of the site to include the removal of the timber retaining wall and vinyl bulkhead. Should the commission consider approving the vinyl bulkhead or some other portion of the project with the submission of a restoration plan for on-site compensation for impacts to vegetated wetlands, then staff recommends reducing the civil charge to $2,000 based on a minimal degree of impact and a moderate degree of deviation. Be happy to answer any questions. Mr. Hawley is here. He is also represented by Mr. Bob Simon.
Questions of Mr. Wood? Ms. Woodward? Mr. Plumley?
Do you mind going back to the low shot of the timber wall? Is that the vinyl bulkhead?
This is the timber retaining wall.
That's the timber retaining wall.
This is the timber retaining wall. Let's go back to land view drawing. The timber retaining wall is shown in red here, and the vinyl bulkhead was constructed and is highlighted in yellow. And again, roughly, the silt fence had been installed right at this boundary. He constructed it either right at the location of the silt fence or just landward of that silt fence. The silt fence also, as Mr. Hawley indicated when I was out there about 3 weeks ago, roughly extended to the boat ramp. If you were to extend this yellow line here, that's where the silt fence would have been. And so in the VIMS assessment, the impact to the 250 square feet of vegetated wetlands were in this location, and that was lost because it was filled, so it was permanently lost. And this area, the 900 square feet, has been impacted.
And the 900 feet was impacted because the wall was put in and there was removal of wetlands and buildup of fill, in essence, is that?
Well, it's my understanding that Mr. Hawley didn't bring in any additional fill behind the timber retaining wall. This area, again, assessing the impacts after the fact is fairly difficult, and that was done based on the site visit as well as a review of the historical images. But that was the assessment, the number that was reached by them.
Thank you.
Other questions? Mr. Tankard?
You stated that in May 2010, Mr. Hawley was made aware of the fact that he needed to submit a joint permit application before conducting any proposed shoreline improvements. Are you sure of that, and how can you tell us a little bit about how you know that is to be so?
That site visit was attended by VMRC staff. Some of the photos from May 2010 were taken by VMRC staff, as well as it was attended also by city staff. I don't have any documentation from the city that that occurred, but we do have photographic photographic evidence.
So as a follow-up question, so he knew that he needed an application before he proceeded with any work?
That is my understanding, is that he was aware of that. And there, as I mentioned, there had been a memorandum for the record in the city's records that back in 2007 he had met with city staff, because at the time the city of Chesapeake still had a wetlands board to discuss shoreline stabilization measures. So I think I'll let him address that further, but it's my understanding he was aware that he, at a minimum, needed to submit an application, at least for the navigation-related improvements where the vinyl bulkhead was installed.
Any other questions? So, thus, how did you come up with the moderate degree of deviation, or what is that?
Well, we came up with whenever vegetated wetlands are filled, that constitutes at a minimum a moderate degree of impact, and then we felt as though the moderate degree of deviation was based on the fact that he was aware that he did need to submit a joint permit application.
Any other questions? All right, we're ready to hear from the applicant. You said he was represented by an attorney, Mr. Simon, is that correct? Both of you will be testifying?
Yes, sir.
Let me swear both of you in. Do you swear the testimony you'll give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, sir.
Please state your name for the record.
I'm Robert Simon, Waterfront Consulting, here to represent Mr. Hawley on this application. And the presentation Justine gave, we've got a few points that we'd like to discuss, maybe clarify with you. We don't quite agree with some of the points that she has made. And we want to also talk about the BIM's assessment of this project. The timeline, starting in 2005, we don't have a problem with that. Mr. Hawley started, he had some issues with his pool, some erosion, upland erosion, brought in some fill material. The fill material actually got out onto the point. Also, is this a pointer here? I pointed it at myself.
The red button.
Is a mess? Okay. The fill was up in this area up here. This was the wetlands violation. The Chesapeake Bay violation was back up in this area up here. Mr. Hawley complied with the City of Chesapeake's order to remove the fill from the wetlands, remove and to install a silt fence at the city designated alignment. The designation or the delineation between what was vegetated wetlands and what was upland RPA buffer. That's where the silt fence was installed in 2005, and that's where it was maintained up until 2011. That silt fence, in fact, that silt fence is still in the field. We saw evidence of it 3 weeks ago. That silt fence is still there, channelward of this retaining structure. That was the alignment that the city said, here is the delineation. So we contend that to say that there is 900 square feet of vegetated wetlands impacts through here, the city had already delineated that for Mr. Hawley and said it's not wetlands here. The meeting that happened in 2010, well, let me go back. The meeting that happened in 2007, I did meet with city staff out there. Mr. Hawley was still having erosion problems out there. We discussed possibilities of how to address this issue because this neighborhood or this whole little community is a little man-made boat basin. They're all bulkheaded. Mr. Hawley's bulkhead has fallen into disrepair. The other bulkheads have been maintained. Mr. Hawley wanted at that time to go out and bulkhead back where the old bulkhead was. I said, that's not happening. They're not going to let you go back out to where that one has eroded. However, we will meet with staff and or the city staff and see what the recommendations are. Yes, we met with them. They recommended just a living shoreline. Let it continue to try and vegetate and hold things. Mr. Hawley said at that point he has tried to do that. He had been maintaining the silt fence. He had been maintaining the area behind it, sprigging or seeding it, and the storm tides still get over this. At this time, it was also where you were told to plant trees for the Chesapeake Bay restoration. 25 trees down in this area. You can see these on this plan, Hesmarth. He was ordered to plant them. 9 of them died due to saltwater intrusion. He replaced them. They have died again. The area of the vinyl bulkhead, this area here, it says we have 108 feet of vinyl bulkhead that's put in there and 250 square feet of impact of vegetated wetlands. We disagree with that as well. There's actually only 37 feet of shoreline bulkhead. The rest of it is return walls up the boat ramp itself. So there's 37 square feet or 37 linear feet of shoreline that he bulkheaded. He pulled the old bulkhead out and drove the new bulkhead in the same footprint as the old bulkhead. Yes, it was failing. Yes, there are some vegetated wetlands behind it. But we calculated the impacts to be 90 square feet of area that was impacted. And of that, only 50% of it was vegetated. The rest was non-vegetated. So we are not denying that there were impacts in the vinyl bulkhead area, but they're not 250 square feet of vegetated wetlands that were impacted. As to the 2010 meeting, I was not present at the 2010 meeting. However, at that time, if a bulkhead permit was issued or talked about or the need for any permit issue or to be applied for, it would have dealt with, from a VMRC standpoint, anything that was landward of mean low water. This was a man-made water body, so this one would not have required anything from VMRC to begin with in 2010. It's man-made. That would have all been under the City of Chesapeake Wetlands Board if he was doing anything channelward or impacting wetlands. Yes, he would have needed a permit at that point. Mr. Holly will tell you that he was not aware that he or was told that he needed any permit for what he was discussing. I was not there. I'll let Mr. Holly discuss that issue.
Mr. Holly, finish. I don't know if you're finished, Mr. Simon.
I think in conclusion, and I'll wrap this up here, Mr. Holly maintains he built this retaining structure where he was told by the City of Chesapeake this is the delineation line. He's not trying to go channel word of it.
Do you have proof or do you have some documentation from
City? Yes, sir. We have the letters from Mick Leskin that said he complied with his orders to remove the fill and install the silt fence at the line designated. Mick Leskin actually went out and inspected it and said this is correct. The violation has been resolved. That's it. That should be in the record. You have that.
Thank you. Mr. Plumlee, you had a question?
My question was when did that letter come or when did the city say, here's the delineation of our jurisdiction over wetlands?
2005.
So that came in 2005, and you had been representing him since at least 2007?
We met, and we didn't do anything in 2007. We looked at options, and at that point, there was not a bulkhead. He wanted to build a bulkhead further out. I said, they're not going to let you build a bulkhead further out. You'll have to look at different options. But, yes, I was aware of this project in 2007 when we met out there. The silt fence that was installed in 2005 is still present on the site. It is land. It is seaward of where the retaining structure is.
And as part of your representation, you had made it known to him that he was going to need to submit for applications and receive approvals. That was made clear to him.
If we wanted to do a bulkhead outside of where of any type of bulkhead structure that was outside of the existing bulkhead structure, yes, he would need some. He would need a pier permit if he wanted to put on a permit. And that's part of this application here. Those things, yes, sir, I did make clear to him.
Any other questions? Mr. Hawley, you wish to speak?
I'm going to talk to him just for a second. Do you still want to mention about where I did the bulkhead?
Well, I think they understand okay. That the bulkhead section here, and it was in the pictures. Can we get to the pictures?
These pictures?
Right here. This shows the bulkhead ramp on the one side. This is what you're talking
right.
about. And this is the other side here, and this bulkhead, the vinyl bulkhead, pulled this one out, came through, and cut back through here.
That's the part that was still holding back, about 3 foot of embankment. But it was just a matter of time before it failed. As you can see, the boat ramp itself, the bulkhead was still the original height there. when I bought this house 25 years ago, the guy that bought it to speculate would have had someone with a chainsaw come and cut the whole bulkhead off, what you see there. And the reason I put that vinyl bulkhead in to keep the embankment from falling in, that would fill in the resource even more, as you can see. That's an extremely low tide that we've got there in these particular pictures.
Anything else, Mr. Holland?
No.
Okay. Any questions? Mr. Plumley?
I'm not sure I understand the idea that one of the bodies of water we have no jurisdiction concerning. What is that?
This whole area, Mr. Plumley, let me go back, if I can, to the plan view. This was originally platted. This was a marsh area. This was one of that was dug out in the late 1950s. So the jurisdiction for BMRC was out here. So this is all man-made back up in here. BMRC takes no jurisdiction over man-made water bodies. So unless it's, in this case, where Chesapeake now has no local wetlands board, and BMRC has to hear this application. I brought that up because at the time that the 2000 meeting took place, that I don't know that he would have been advised that he needed anything from BMRC because it was out of the jurisdiction of BMRC. It would have been under the local wetlands board that he would have been required to do something to impact wetlands. Again, Mr. Hawley was under the impression everything he was doing was landward of the demarcation line that the city of Chesapeake told him. This is wetlands. This is not.
Okay. Any other questions? Anyone else wish to speak to this agenda item?
Mr. Commissioner, I do want to ask
Mr.
Hawley, what was your understanding with regards to the permits that were required of you before you went out and did
right.
the construction work that you did?
I understand. Well, I thought, as he said, that the Chesapeake would come into contact with any bulkheading and anything. And if so, and I grant you, I should have done that first, you know. I've been way ahead of the game than where I am now. It's where me and some neighbors and, you know, people that's out of this, my land pretty much filling in this cove, they said, man, you ought to stop that darn bulkhead from falling in. So they agreed to help me, so we put in the vinyl bulkhead, you know, as you see. And then with the storms, I couldn't tell you how many times I brought back the dirt and filled in the low spots and seeded and, you know, to grow grass, and the geese come, they eat stuff down to a nub, then you got the storms, and then you got erosion again. So I try to maintain that uplands area the best I could. Every tree I ever planted died because you get the salt water come up there and the storms and everything. And that was quite an expense buying trees and putting them in. So I was just trying to create a little more of a raised area there so that grasses would grow, maybe trees would grow. You know, just trying to protect what I had, and instead of filling in the resource, which, you know, as you can see from where the old bulkhead was and from the constant washing away, that, you know, there's not much of a canal left. I mean, it's still serviceable for jet skis and everything pretty much, but I was just trying to, you know.
Is the retaining wall doing it? Is it preventing the washover?
Yeah, boy, what a huge difference. This retaining wall is just a tongue and groove piece of sheet piling, like if you're putting in a sheet piling bulkhead. It's just turned sideways. And, of course, I've got the real good quality silt fence behind it. And I did bring in a load of supposedly topsoil, you know, Craigslist, my gosh. But anyway, it did have some asphalt in it. And I removed as much as I could and raked it. And I ain't happy with it, but Craigslist. So I've done the best I can. And I grew up in the neighborhood. It was 58 when I moved in. That's when the neighborhood was new. I remember them digging all these canals. They had a big old drag line and big wooden platforms that they moved around and threw the mud up on the banks. And Mr. Sharona, who owned the property and was selling the plats back in the day, you know, people would put in the bulkheads there, and some of the steel railroad ties bulkheads are still existent back in there. So, you know, the lady lawyer that owned this originally, she put in the bulkhead and backfilled it, but it started to fail. And everybody else has kept their bulkheads up. And, of course,
I've only owned it for 25 years, and of course, 25 years ago is when they, you know, you couldn't put it back where it was. So I've made the done what I could to keep what I've got to keep it from constantly eroding. And again, yeah, I should have got a permit. I won't dispute that, but I'm just trying to protect my investment.
But you're asking us not to fine you and to allow you to keep both structures. I want to make sure I understand what
nice
your position is here.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know. If you can see my point of view, like I say, I was wrong in not getting a permit. It was, again, where I had the opportunity, some neighbors who were saying, hey, we'll help you put in a bulkhead and keep this constant thing filling in. And I don't know, you know, it's just sounded good at the time. The best I can say.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Hawley.
Yes, sir.
The matter is before the commission. Tony, do you have anything you wanted to add at this point?
Not a whole lot. I think I will just say a little bit about the jurisdiction issue.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, state-owned submerged lands is under 1200 over Title 28-2. That's one thing the commission is responsible for permitting. The wetlands issues, when there is a wetland board, of course, it falls to the wetland board to have primary responsibility for the permit review. But it's not to say we aren't involved. We have oversight and review responsibility for the administration of the Wetland Act in each jurisdiction that adopts the ordinance, and it's not unusual for us to make site visits with applicants and pre-application site visits with wetland boards to advise on the extent of jurisdiction and what requires permits. So we routinely advise, on those issues or make comment on those issues relative to the jurisdiction because of our oversight responsibilities with the Wetlands Act.
Thank you. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could, Tony, I do have one follow-up question. And this gets back to staff's recommendation. I mean, staff has recommended removal of the structures. But there's some discussion later about if any of the projects approve, then you recommend submission of a restoration plan that includes on-site compensation. How much opportunity is there for on-site compensation or restoration if those structures are left in place? In other words, if the timber bulkhead is left in place, as is being asked by the applicant, if the vinyl bulkhead is left in place, as is also being requested, how much room is there for any restoration on site?
I think I understand. I will address your comment and make a stab at that, but I have not been to the site personally. Justine has, and I'll ask her to elaborate if I do not adequately address your question. Anyway, the red line is the retaining wall, and as you can see up near the top of that red line, it ends. That's where the marsh was mowed in that area, and it stopped mowing and started going back. So there may be some opportunity at that corner of the project for compensation on site. What we were getting at was if part of the wall stayed down where the vinyl is and you removed the retaining wall where the red line was, there seemed to be ample area for restoration through that area and compensation for the yellow area where the retaining wall was. So if everything stays, there's less opportunity for on-site compensation. And if there is not adequate area on-site, there is an opportunity in Chesapeake for use of a mitigation bank. There is a tidal wetland bank, the Libertyville Bank, in the Elizabeth River system that could be used if on-site conditions did not allow for entire compensation of the permitted wetland impacts if you choose to authorize something. So I don't know if Justine has anything to add with regard to space and opportunities at the site or not, but that's my thought on response to your question.
Thank you.
Anything to add?
I think Tony was correct, and we would have to ask Mr. Hawley. We had initially discussed at one of my first site visits possible on-site compensation up in this section. I know he had some concerns with the neighbor, any potential impacts to the neighboring property, but that may be something that he might.
Mr. Hawley, you
want to
comment on that?
Yes, sir. That used to have fescue down there years ago. Again, it's, the washout, whatever. And according to Bob there, when he did the elevations and everything, some of that is still above the wetlands jurisdiction, I guess. And, yeah, I oppose the fact that my neighbor's going to get awful mad if I grade down next to the fence there and make it wetlands. But if that's the compensation that you seek, and I'll give it up, it's the only place.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
That is before the commission.
Let me ask a question.
Mr. Fox.
this is highland right here, right? The neighbor's property? That's not water. The water is only over on this left side. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mr. Fox and members of the commission, there is enough room up here, and if we slope down from the property line at a 3-to-1 slope, that we could create some compensation mitigation in this area up here, I think, to offset the impacts.
It would offset the impacts?
Yes, sir.
Just a question to staff, I guess, is what amount of square feet are we looking for compensation if we were to go in that direction?
1,100.
1,100 square feet?
Yeah,
1,150 square feet. Mm-hmm. 1,150. It's the 900 plus the 250, correct? All right. Thank you.
I would be in favor of, in this instance, I'm a little worried about sending him out there to remove what he's done and to replace it. I think that's going to be more disruption, and I'd want to avoid that. It would be my preference to leave what's there. I'm a little concerned that we don't have a lot of proof about the conversations and what the city informed him that he was able to do, because there was a wetlands board at one point, there was a staff. There hasn't been much presented from that perspective. I would rather use the money to go out and do the site restoration work as opposed to pay a civil penalty. That would be my preference. I don't know if I'd get support for that, but that my motion would be to allow both structures to remain and to not assess the $6,000 civil penalty, and instead order a restoration plan be provided that compensates for the 1,150 impacted square feet.
And that is a motion.
That's a motion.
So seconded by Mr. Beck. Comments on the motion? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I asked a question about on-site restoration, recognizing that, in fact, these structures were already installed and in place, and whether or not that would be a viable alternative. And it sounds like there is some opportunity based on the testimony we've heard to do that. I am troubled, though, by the, I think the record indicates that, based on the testimony of commission staff, that they did indicate to the applicant that a joint permit application was necessary, and that's why we got to this point, that we didn't have public review, we didn't have a VIMS review, we didn't have a staff review ahead of the construction of the project. And had the applicant benefited from that type of review, it would have likely looked different than it does today, with a different set of impacts. And so I guess I have some trouble with the motion, because I think some responsibility is necessary relative to a civil charge. I agree that it makes sense to leave the structures and pursue an on-site mitigation, but I would be more inclined to support what the staff has recommended relative to the civil charge.
Would include the $2,000 civil charge. Is that what you're referring to? Right here?
Yes. So staff's recommendation in that instance includes a $2,000 civil charge.
That's reasonable. I would agree to amend my motion to include it, because that is part, I forgot that was part of the recommendation, that they go for, because we don't like people to go out and just do what they want to do, and I think they need to have some penalty for having done that. So I would agree to amend the motion to include the $2,000 charge, I guess is what we're calling it.
Civil charge.
Civil charge.
Okay. Mr. Beck, you're in agreement with that as a seconder? All right. Any further comments on the amended motion? Everyone clear?
Yes.
Ready to vote? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you.